Hi, Henry Mark. What happened Thursday night, July 30th? What happened across from the federal courthouse in the sort of the government center of Portland?
I got down there about 10 o'clock, and there's a lot that goes on at these events, different groups and different actions and different activities and different focuses. But before things ever really got to in front of the federal courthouse, there's lots of speeches in front of the Justice Center the next block over, and there was a march of the moms who are now under a different name. I think it's called like Moms United for Black Lives or something. And then the speeches up at the Justice Center I thought were really good. People were really together. There were a lot of people down there. And then they kind of moved over in front of the federal courthouse. Then I don't know their names, but there were some fantastic women leaders, black people of color leaders who got on the megaphone and, I don't know, really kind of held the crowd for like a long time with a lot of passion. And yeah, there were people just kind of, as every night, there's people all over. There's people just out on the periphery talking. There's people nearby chanting. But yeah, the night went on and basically, no officers ever came out of the building, which was the key. But other than that, the night was the same as most of the other nights recently. It was the same kind of energy. You know, every night's a little different, but the brutal attacks that the feds have been doing these last few nights, and even the PPB this past weekend, you know, they had nothing to do with people misbehaving. They were just sadistic and desires to gain information, intimidate a crowd, hurt and gas people. But the idea that last night was like more peaceful than other nights had nothing to do with the crowd. The crowd has been peaceful most of these nights. I think if the state troopers had been out there inside the fence, you know, I personally would have wanted to engage with them a lot more, like just verbally, because I'm angry at things, and I'm sure other people are too. But
I saw a picture of a demonstrator and a state trooper looking at each other. I wasn't sure, but the state troopers never came out, right? That picture was...
The troopers had come out earlier in the day. I'm not sure when. They might have been out there multiple times. That had happened already. They had some troopers out there in their little hats or whatever, and they were talking with some people. But yeah, if you look at the statements from the state officials, their goal, they really, really want to calm this thing down. I think their goal is to not have those troopers out there at all. That fence is reinforced on double sides.
Not having robocops, it seems to me, is also important. I mean, these men in there, they look like machines, right, with those bizarre outfits. It's insulting, and it also is a demonstration sort of state brutal power, right? It's enormously provocative.
Yeah, I mean, look, the last night, they knew they were pulling out. They got out this huge new device that's just blowing ridiculous amounts of tear gas just right into people's faces, right into women's faces, moms' faces. They blow them off the fence, and then they march out a block from their building, and they attack them in the street with all sorts of munitions. That's what they did two nights ago. That was just one of five different stare downs and battles they got in with people, but it was mostly on women. And if you think about these manly police who say they're out protecting us, you know, how many of them were out there defending these women from getting attacked? You know, it just lays it all bare. These people don't care about anything. They don't care about the people here. The police see these people as the enemy. The federal police see these people as the enemy. And it's just blatantly obvious. And it's all ridiculous, and it should all be dismantled. It's been so absurd. You know, I'm just like taking my first, you know, I've only been tear gassed once of the past three nights after having it 7 days in a row. So I'm starting to kind of like take a deep breath and take in what I just experienced. But yeah, I find what we just went through is an outrage. You know, they committed environmental destruction. They committed so much violence against women. They committed so much violence against older people, just standing there, gassing them. They committed so much violence that they had to pull out with their tails between their legs because they were hurting the image of the U.S. military so badly. The Department of Homeland Security, they were just like damaging themselves so badly while they were online bragging about it. In reality, they knew that we were defeating them by just standing there and taking it and coming back and standing face to face with them. You know, Wednesday night, people over and over chose to form walls and stand face to face with these these armed people who you have no idea what they're going to do. They were doing different maneuvers. They were showing up on top of multiple buildings, looking down on you with guns. They were pulling maneuvers where they brought a line in behind you and pinched people in to a block, thinking they might all get mass arrested or who knows what. They were just out all kinds of different ways. It was like standoffs for hours on end, and they never let you rest. They go back in, they come back out, they attack some more. They do a ridiculously insane amount of gas at like 1:30 in the morning. I mean, it's just sadism, but, you know, the mainstream press, you're not allowed to say that the U.S. military and all these people, that they're sadists, that they're fascists. So we end up saying like, oh, well, they must have been provoked by some, you know, no, they're just doing sadistic pain on women and people they view as like anti-government. I don't even know. Like they just feel entitled to do that to people. And the Portland Police Bureau, they were working with the feds the whole time. They were super sadistic out there on like a Saturday night. They were pushing people around downtown. So, you know, it'll be an interesting time to see what happens now, because a bunch of taboos were just blown open publicly. And it's probably, this will be the end.
There's a lot of lawsuits, and there's also a lot of arrestees that they're going to either have to release or they're going to go to trial. I think they're in for investigations as well as what happened.
Yeah, they arrested people. They're gathering tons of intelligence. They're gathering intelligence on us. So they're arresting, you know, a lot of the people they're arresting did no violence whatsoever. They're like the most calm, responsible people out there. They're arresting some of them and like stealing their equipment. And those people have contacts all throughout the community. So they're building intelligence files on, they're criminalizing those young people among us, you know, millennials, younger, who are out there like doing the right thing, trying to be responsible, photograph what they're doing, keep track of relationships out there on the street. Those are the people they're targeting for arrest. And they'll take them in, they'll try to take a DNA sample, they ask for a social security number, all these things that they're not supposed to do. They just put you in a cell. And then they just release you, sometimes with no charges, but then they'll take your phone and they'll get into people's phones and get all their contacts. So they're running these intelligence operations that are attempts at intimidation, coercion, blackmail, criminalization, et cetera. So all that stuff's going on too. They were even opening intelligence files. You know, the Washington Post caught the Homeland Security opening intelligence files on New York Times journalists who were here. Mike Baker, New York Times journalist. So that's how bold they feel. You know, that's like extremely illegal to do that. Opening an actual file that they're passing between intelligence agencies to get into this journalist's contacts. If they're doing it to someone like that who has tons of legal cover, they're doing it to all of us who have no legal cover. And so, you know, other people in other cities will see that and fear that. That's part of it, too.
Yeah, what you're expressing is constitutional violations that my guess is there's a lot of lawyers affiliated with the ACLU and other groups some to the left of the ACLU who would be very happy to begin inquiring about what they were doing with people's telephones and where those files are going and who they're being shared with.
Yeah, but you can't get it. You can't get it because they classify it. I'm just saying, like, it's why getting that information has to come out via these leaks that come out, these big document dumps and leaks and stuff like that. They don't give it up because, you know, they're labeling people here, this is terrorist activity. So once it's terrorist activity, that's like federal classified. That's like a war type of thing. So the ACLU can't go in there and get that kind of stuff. That's why people are leaking this stuff to the press. So we'll see. There's going to be a million problems for society, and it's just one of them. But yeah.
This is Bill Resnick talking to Emory Moore, Portland street historian. He's been to over 50 protests in the last 2 months, written on them on Facebook, and been interviewed on KABU. We're discussing the protests, summing things up, how the federal troops were driven out of the city, and the Portland police put on the defensive, hopefully to be forced to very, very significantly change. Well, it seemed to me, though, it was quite outstanding was, I guess there was a party afterwards, right? Was there dancing and singing and chanting? And
almost every night there's dancing and singing. It's just last night there just happened to be no police attacks. But, yeah, it was a great night for Portland. People were out. It was beautiful to see the sort of some of the moms come together, and just the spirit of people out there, you know, overall is absolutely tremendous. It's an absolute like quantum leap forward for, you know, white people willing to stand strong for Black Lives Matter. So yeah, it was beautiful out there, but I would just caution to say, you know, it wasn't more beautiful than the night before or the night before or the night before. Every night has been amazing spirit out there, amazing speeches, amazing actions, amazing organizing, amazing service, people playing drums and music while we're getting attacked, let alone while we're just hanging out. You know, people like keeping the spirit up and really working for it. And that's how we were able to get through this so successfully. And then, yeah, it then comes down to how people handle interpreting and talking about the events afterwards. And that includes journalists, and it also includes prominent people. So if like a fire gets set sometime, then someone can say it was a violent protest. And then a bunch of people can come out and say that all the people there were violent protesters and that they're all bad and that they all deserved to be gassed. So A, people shouldn't believe that. B, people shouldn't be out there doing that and saying those kinds of things. C, people should go to the events and they should carefully record what happened and push back against this kind of thing. And then you mentioned there also the police have cameras, and these federal police have all sorts of really intense technological equipment that has been reported on now. They got their planes, they got stingray devices, you know, all sorts of stuff. So they are, you know, if you just go to the mom's march, that's what they want. You can just walk around, society's not going to change, whatever. It's still a really cool event. But at these events where something might change, that's when the counter-revolutionary measures come out. So, oh, you want to come to this event? Well, the police have a method called raising the price of participation. Oh, you want to come to it? Well, you might get attacked, or we might have your video now, or you start to get closer and closer to being criminalized. That's how these things work. That's how the U.S. liberal hegemony worldwide works.
Hi, folks. That was me, Bill Resnick, talking to Emory Mark, Parkland activist and our street historian, who's been to over 50 Black Lives Matter protests over the last 2 months, all those marches, car caravans, picnics, protests, mostly masked with attempt at social distancing. Follow the Portland they prepared for the culmination of this chapter of Portland's struggle. Emory Mark described it. The culmination came Thursday and Friday, July 30th and 31st, the last of the huge nightly protests in the confrontation zone in front of the courthouses and the two parks. Emory described the contrast between the near entirely nonviolent but determined, spirited, militant, mutually aiding protesters and the callous and vicious behavior of the federal troops and the Portland police. What was their aim, as described by Emory? Well, to raise the price of participation, to dominate the streets as ordered by Trump, that wannabe deranged autocrat trying to intimidate a people who would not yield. That was where my recorded talk with Emory ended. So right now I'll continue with a mole commentary on what lies ahead. To begin, when the troops withdrew to the inside of the federal courthouse, that was a great victory. But still, it was just one successful battle, and over the next months, we're sure to be further tested. All the way through the long COVID-19 pandemic, the coming election, and into the next years of continuous struggle, the challenge we face is to continue, indeed, strengthen the spirit and powerful movements, not just in Portland, but across the country, and to build those movements here and everywhere. But more specifically, what does that mean? What to do now in Portland? Well, let's start with transforming police. In fact, the whole criminal justice system, 70, 60 years ago, black struggle, known as the Civil Rights Movement, of course, it ignited a great uprising that won a great deal for many, including women, sexual minorities, the not fully abled, more, but not very much for blacks and other people of color. We must ensure that today's struggle has better results for Afro-Americans. In Portland, that means, first, large steps to defund the police, to force the city council to create democratically organized, often peer-to-peer helping services, to replace police handling of homelessness and mental health emergency addiction for those who want help, school disorder, troubled children, domestic violence in most cases, help for people in sex work who want to leave. Those are not jobs for police. And second, we have to end police impunity and killing. How? Take the lead from the groups and the police reform network to challenge in police contract negotiation. Pushing the city to take action that they have refused to do for years, especially as to the use of force. Also to push Portland's new district attorney who ran on a reform platform. Push him to take real action on many fronts to keep the police accountable. Also, of course, strengthen the Police Citizen Review Board, making sure the voters come out in the coming election to change the city charter. We also must work to end poverty and precarity and homelessness in this city, like across the country. Inequality is fast growing, so is evictions, homelessness, inability for even those with health insurance to afford the co-pays, and then there's student debt, all growing. Portland at minimum can do a lot as to poverty, homelessness, and evictions, and commit itself to a militant push for state and federal action. Then, of course, we have to stop climate change. It's been on the City Council agenda over the last 20 years, and they've taken some action. For one, it's created a very comprehensive, very beautifully illustrated, award-winning climate action plan and updated it every 5 years. Not only that, they recently declared a climate change emergency, an official pronouncement. But, very unfortunately, they have done almost nothing to implement their plan or to deal with the emergency, which requires dramatic reduction of greenhouse gas emissions. When compared to several larger and smaller cities in California, Portland has done virtually nothing. Well, what must Portland do? Well, emulate those many other cities around the world, including in California, to build out and electrify transport, to build cultures of energy conservation and use reduction, and to build out local clean and green renewable sun and wind energy production with local storage. Instead of big top-down corporate bureaucracies, those local agencies of energy production and distribution, they can be advised and accountable to local people. Its workers can rotate jobs, learn skills, take part in agency decision-making, and confederated locally and regionally, these public agencies are much more reliable, much less expensive, much quicker and easier to build out than the humongous corporate systems. They require vastly expensive, environmentally destructive, continent-spanning grids that, like so many grand plans of the military-industrial complex, they'll never be completed. In these local struggle and battles, we can educate ourselves and share with our comrades and show to others that all this and more is possible, that we, humanity, possess all the technologies in every area of material and cultural production, in energy and agriculture, communications, transportation, environmental restoration. We can build a truly democratic, sustainable, caring, and flourishing societies. In fact, we have built examples around the planet that succeed, that only must be universalized, of course, adapted for local circumstances. We also know how to organize democratically. A huge literature has examined cooperative, democratically operating teams and operations in near every area of human nature, not just material production in workshops, but also in schools, houses, groups, worship groups, rehabilitation programs, even sports teams, some self-managed by players. We know that nearly all of us, ordinary folks of an extraordinary species, have the capacity for love and caring, for democratically working together and making democratic decisions that are optimal and just. So in our current system, these capacities are manipulated, stunted, deformed. In our highly stratified society where a small, rich minority dominate decision-making the way things work, but still these capacities do get expressed in social groups, in schools, churches, unions, and movements. We know the peoples around the world are hungry for change, and they know change is necessary, and they can be mobilized around the change program. Yes, it's a big agenda, a huge program, but when you break it down into sectors like the police and criminal justice, climate change, health care, social decision-making, work organization, we know what succeeds. Still, the recent uprising galvanized the nation and showed things could change, and business as usual cannot continue, if only because our current system is destroying the ecosystems upon which life depends. We have no choice but to mobilize for sweeping change, for reconstruction of all production and the ways of life of the industrialized countries, which democratic revolution, of course, our formidable enemies fear. Still, we have shown what can and must be done. That ends my sermonette. I hope everybody stays active, marching, singing, reading, teaching ourselves, arguing, and pushing the city to start modeling the reconstruction we need. This was Bill Resnick for the Old Mole in these interesting times, brimming over with danger and opportunity.